This is Pam Young. Today is February 23rd, 2008. I'm interviewing Baby Ray Fanelson here at Jerusalem Baptist Church in Roanoke, Virginia. Okay, so start out by telling us when you were born.
July 27th, 1945.
And you were born in Roanoke?
Roanoke Borough Memorial Hospital.
And how long have you lived in Roanoke? All your life?
Except for some years in San Francisco. All my life, yeah.
And what neighborhoods have you lived in?
When I was born, I was living at 12 and a half Street. I moved to my paternal grandmother's house on 14th Street, across the street from my maternal grandmother and father, where I live now. And from there, after my mother remarried, we moved to Grayson Avenue, Northwest.
Tell me about your parents and brothers and sisters.
My father, Baby Ray Sr., my mother, Annie Laura Davis Fanelson Enoch. I had a set of twin brothers. One was accidentally killed by his best friend on 11th Street Northwest. The other died of Agent Orange complications. So I'm the only only child left. We have four stepsisters. Four girls. I lived at on 14th Street. It was like a family affair. My uncle, my mother's brother, lived next door, Otha Davis. That's him up there. And my uncle and aunt lived next door. My mother's mother and father lived across the street. Her sister was still at A&T, so I guess she essentially lived there also, and was the first secretary at Hurt Park. My grandmother, my maternal grandmother, was also the first president of the club that supports the school? Parent Teachers Association.
Yeah.
And my paternal grandmother, with whom I was living then, was Elder Esther Fanelson, who was probably one of, or she was the only female on the Ministers Association in the city, and she was secretary of it. She was minister of Mount Sinai Presbyterian Church, which was right at the end of 10th Street Bridge. It's now on Salem Avenue and 14th Street, and pastored by her daughter. On that side of the family, there were several ministers, one in Norfolk. They were my grandmother's daughters. And the one in Washington, well, I guess there were two. When I lived at 12 and a half Street, my Uncle Cecil lived, we lived in a duplex. My father's brother lived next door with his family. My grandfather just died in 2000 at 97. His wife, Elizabeth Davis, died, I'm not for sure, but it was at least 10 years or more before. Maybe 15 years before. Let's see.
Do you have any happy memories growing up? Any?
I have nothing but happy memories. I was.
Where'd you go to school?
I went to Loudoun Elementary, Harrison, and Addison. If I'm not mistaken, I was the last segregated class to graduate from Addison. I don't remember any bad times. I am a musician.
Do you have any favorite teachers that you remember?
Oh yeah. I think my first grade teacher, Miss Morris, I felt like she cared too much for us. So that reinforced my being spoiled, I guess. I had a sister that was born before me, so I see how, and she died of SIDS. So when I was born, as I look back on it now, I sort of see how I was probably spoiled a little bit. Even after the twins, I thought they did a very good job. But Miss Morris was a very sweet lady. I remember her as being, I would be excited about going to school because all we did was play, as I remember. She also sent me to Addison, the high school, to sing a solo, I remember. I was singing, I guess, before then. I remember that because my babysitter, who also lived on the same street at 12 and a half street, was in high school, and she had to assure me that these people weren't going to eat me. And, Loudoun Avenue. I've always had a great affection for women of that. I don't know what it is. My grandmother was a tall, slender, full-figured woman, and a perfectionist, and at keeping house and cooking. I mean, she was, without getting a hair out of place, get it all done. And that's how I remember Miss Wheaton, who later remarried and became Miss Burrell. And I was so upset about that she lived down the street on Grayson, and I was in high school, that I came by her house. She was sitting on the porch one day with tears in my eyes, and I told her, "I just can't call you Miss Burrell." So she said, "Okay, well, I really cared for her." She had taught my father also, and she was a member of Jerusalem before she transferred to First Baptist. No, High Street, I'm sorry. I guess I can't think right off, so I guess they really didn't matter. So that's first grade, and I'd known Miss Wheaton all my life, so there were other teachers that I admired, but I was not close with. Let's see, one.
Well, okay, how about describe the house you grew up in?
Well, 12 and a half Street, where I was living when I was born, I remember being bathed in the sink. Some people question that, but I can just see myself now laying, looking out the window, just enjoying just being rubbed and playing in warm water. That was a duplex. I lived next door to my Uncle Cecil, who even at his funeral, people were... his father was I can't think of the Indian blood. It's a Florida tribe.
Like Iroquois?
No. Anyway, even at his funeral, people were saying that was one handsome man. And at his son's funeral, which was about 5 years ago, they were saying the same thing. So he lived next door. And when my parents, was it before? Oh, my mother and father and, I, and my brothers and I moved to 14th Street to live with his mother. And she was Pentecostal. So once a week there was a great noise in her parlor. But we eventually, my mother and father divorced. And, first my grandmother moved and we had the whole house. Then my mother and father divorced. And my aunt divided the house to a duplex and we lived there. And my mother remarried, a widower with four daughters. And up until that time, as I was saying, my grandmother and grandfather lived across the street. I've known and my uncle lived next door. He did move to Danville in the latter time that we was there. Then we moved to Grayson, and that was a, let's see, I think we had 1, 2, 3 bedrooms, 1 bathroom, a kitchen and a living room, and 7 kids. And yet, I still, to this day, that's why I was dumbfounded when someone at work once said, "You left the toilet seat up." I said, "What did you do, back in with your eyes closed?" I've never understood it. I've never understood it, you know. Like, I was always told to lift the seat. And you'd think that I would be doing the service. So, I never, and refused to, because it makes no sense to me. Now it's, seems as though the fewer people there, the bigger the house gets. We have a full living area and kitchen downstairs, and extra bathroom. And my younger sister lives there now with her daughter. Her son just went to college. And her daughter's 2 kids. So I guess they have a little more space.
What did your family do for a living? Or?
My father was worked for Northrop Grumman. He was being trained as one of to be an engineer to drive, but he died of complications from alcohol. My mother was a domestic. She worked for the Swartz family for several years. She eventually, when she remarried, she went to Veterans. I remember her. She started as in the kitchen washing pots and pans on a split shift. She retired a manager into dietetics. So that shows you how industrious that side of my mother's side of the family. And my father's side, and not as consistently. My stepfather worked at Valley Cadillac and Oldsmobile all his life. He was known as Mr. Cadillac. People were coming to town from, usually on business trips or whatever, once a year, twice a year. They would always call him for extra work. When he died, I think there must have been 7, 8 Cadillacs donated to the family for use. My grandfather never stopped working. I think he fell off his garage roof at 87 after because he wanted to fix the roof. But he didn't hurt himself. first strong man. He worked for, my grandmother worked for the Kofa family. My grandfather worked for Kofa Industries. They, I think they eventually changed the name or merged or sold the business or whatever. But that was about his third job. He also worked at the mill. He retired from there. Retired from Kofa.
Viscose?
Yeah. Yeah. Uh-huh.
Do you remember that at all when he worked there? Was that?
Yes. I wasn't aware of what where he was living, but I working, but he had a friend who had a farm out near 419 in that area when it was still residential. And that's, we used to get whole milk from there. I remember making butter and hating when the cows got in the clover. So he was working there then with this, that his friend was giving us whole milk. And even today, I love milk, but pasteurized milk is just a side of water to me. And for a domestic, I have to say that because of my grandmother's insisting everything being done exactly right, of being a perfectionist, and my grandfather's steady, constant, just working. He would never, he only bought two new cars, 72 and 71, Chrysler New Yorkers, only cars he ever bought. Up to that point, he always bought Chrysler New Yorkers that were 2 years, 3 years older. He always paid cash and didn't understand. When I bought my brand new, the only new car I've ever had, 72 Volkswagen convertible, and he came out of the porch and said, "Where is it?" He said, "That's not a car, that's a lawnmower." And he asked me how much it costs, and I told him, and if you can't afford to pay cash for it, you can't afford it. My grandmother, even though she was domestic, once showed me a closet full of dresses. She said, "Every one of them dresses costs $500. They were industrious, you know. Like I said, she baked pies. I mean, she'd get up Saturday morning and she would have, I can't say how many, sweet potato, coconut cakes. She was a member of this Jerusalem also. Papa was a usher. Mama, I call them Papa and Mama. It's really strange that even when my mother and she were in the same room, I don't know how they could tell inflections or what, but I could say Mama and the right one would answer each time. Same with my brothers. My mother's sister also was in, she worked as, she graduated from A&T in North Carolina, Greensboro, and she worked there for several years as a secretary. She was the first secretary at Hurd Park School, and died at, I think, in her early 40s from complications from sickle cell. My uncle, who lived next door, was not quite as industrious, but he worked for an insurance company here in Roanoke, And then he continued that and worked for a factory in the Danville area.
Let's see, what were there any family stories that were passed down from generation to generation that you remember?
Probably, but I don't know if I think of them now. I can say that I did meet my grandfather's mother. I remember her, who was, I think, had been a slave, or her parents were slaves. I know her parents were slaves, but she was about 100 then. And in that same area, that's Lumberton, St. Paul area of North Carolina, I once met a lady that my grandfather, who didn't show a lot of emotion all his life. He missed his wife. He and I lived alone at the house on 14th Street for a while, and frequently I'd pass him, he'd have a tear or two on his cheek. And once he told me, he said, "You'd never been married, you'd never understand." She'd been dead for at least 10 years by then, at that time. And I met his mother. And once when we were in North Carolina, he said he wanted to go by to see this lady. He was probably in his early 80s. The lady was 116 keeps coming to mind, but I'm not sure. Her daughter was 72. She had sent her daughter to the store. The daughter came back, and as I watched them exchange money and whatever she got at the store, it was like a child. And shortly afterwards, she also didn't know that my grandmother had died then. She also didn't know that my grandmother died. She said, "You know, Walter, I'm sorry to hear about Elizabeth." And shortly after, she said, "Well, I'm sorry, y'all have to go. It's time for me to go to bed." It was like 7:30, 8 o'clock. But she was an old woman, but she was still kicking. Well,
so, and you said you were in the military, too?
I was in the Air Force, yes. I was stationed at Missouri, and I went to Vietnam at Saigon.
Redrafted, or?
No, I volunteered for the Air Force. Volunteered to go to Vietnam. Not about any patriotism. It was just a thing that everybody did at my base. It was investigated several times because everybody wanted to get out, even if it meant going to Vietnam, because of being in the Air Force and having being in SAC, Strategic Air Command. It was a dual commitment. One had to be aware that if an investigation or an inspection came, of who was given the inspection, because the answers could be totally different and the response could be totally different. We had Minuteman missiles. In fact, I was never around airplanes until I got to Vietnam. I was in Saigon at Vietnam, and I enjoy that too. In fact, basically, I enjoy most of what I do. And I enjoy doing nothing.
What do you do now?
Nothing. No, I'm on Social Security disability. And I haven't been driving for the last year, so I'd like to get back to my singing. I used to sing with the symphony choir, and I sing. I've sung here. I've always sung. But one needs transportation to get to. Rehearsals and things. I sang consistently at Second Presbyterian for a while. That was one of my favorites. I also sang at St. Andrew. In fact, I was a member of the first processing choir at St. Andrew. My roommate was the choir director. I'm a member of Christ Episcopal. And I used to sing there, the organist, and I don't have a clear view of what really is music. The same view of what music is. So I don't. And that's hard for me because I joined the Episcopal Church when I was in San Francisco. And 90% of why I joined was that particular denomination was because of their respect for music. Although it's not a banjo, it's not a guitar type thing with him, it's French. And although I'm not anywhere near an authority on music, I love organ music, pipe organ music. And he loves French pipe organ. And I'm the first to tell you, I know very little. I just know what I like to hear. And between his French and his improvisations, I mean, I'm learning the whole time I'm listening, right? So don't improvise on me and call it music. And I knew well enough when he was throwing in improvisations, and I don't need to hear that.
Let's see. Do you have any fond memories of childhood or a favorite holiday event or anything like that?
Well, every traditional family holiday, like I say, my grandmother was a perfectionist. So we have to this day family meals on Sunday at my sister's house. Every Sunday is like a holiday as far as meals go. Christmas, Thanksgiving, as much as in the teens to 20 people, mostly family, I guess you could say, and neighbors on 14th Street. It bordered on being common, except for visually it was so spectacular and tasty. I even remember a disappointing thing when at some point my grandmother or someone suggested that we spread out the one Thanksgiving at one my grandmother's house, our Christmas at my grandmother's house, Thanksgiving at her sister's house in Northwest. And I think once or twice my Uncle Arthur and his wife, who was way down on the cooking scale, but everybody contributed. But and then that was sort of like a disappointment. But holidays, yes, I remember them as being big family affairs.
Since you're into music, do you remember any entertainers that came to perform and seeing them?
Well, as my brothers used to say, they ran the streets and I ran the alleys. As far as Henry Street goes, I know very little about it. My music was my life, and there was very little of interest to me on Henry Street. So as far as entertainers coming, Mahalia Jackson came, and although I didn't get to see her, Little Richard came. I didn't want to see him. So any traditional, I can't think of anyone else. B.B. Keene came, and I took my aunt, my grandmother's sister, to see her him because she was into blues, and she was a pretty good-sized woman. It was really nice. I had my 72 Volkswagen convertible, and we would run all around town. But I took her to see B.B. King. At Roanoke College, I saw this a cappella male group. Can't come up with the name now. But that was really, really, I really enjoyed that. I think I saw them twice, I'm not sure. But Jeff Sandborg is head of music at Roanoke College. He's also the director of choir Second Prayers. His wife is the organist. They were great influence on me as far as it was a period of being relaxed and constantly learning. I mean, I told him I was taking voice lessons from him for a while, and I stopped. I said, I get enough in rehearsal. So I can't think of the name of that group. It was really, really, I think it was about six guys, and the harmony was so close, and it was beautiful.
How do you see Roanoke has changed over the years?
Just recently, it seems that it might be coming out of coma as far as growing. It wasn't a part of me to think so much about segregation or whatever, but I think despite itself, it just sat around and did nothing when it could have grown if it had, even after integration, if it had just truly from the heart did it. Violence is much worse. I remember when we lived on Grayson. Frequently, well, it was what we did. We'd leave church here in Northwest and walk across 10th Street Bridge after service if we wanted to, or we waited and caught a ride with our parents. But the door was always open, at least unlocked. And if it was accidentally locked, that was a very disturbing thing. The lack of I to me sound like an old person because I heard it when I was young. The lack of basic respect, even within my own family now, of some of the kids is just unbelievable. I have one of my stepsisters. Well, her daughter, she only has one, but she has three daughters. They all live with my stepsister. She lost her house recently. Just common decency of good morning. No. In fact, in the last month, I have stopped saying good morning first, and only one of them, infrequently, will say hi when we first come in contact with each other. And that just bugs me, yeah. But this apple never separated from the tree because the mama is barely much better and she's always lived with her mother. So I guess that's one box of apples that will probably be like that all along. But I find that other people's kids, depending, you know, on if they've had any raisin, but in general, I find kids and young adults to be rude. And parents indulgent and it's, I think, has contributed a lot to the violence and the in general. I've recently been riding the bus to get to from veterans. I use my sister takes me, and just the people on the street on the buses. I used to love to ride the bus in San Francisco because usually people either ignored you or something interesting was happening. Here, it's just boring because it's usually something disinteresting that was being forced on you because they were talking so loud or cell phones, whatever.
Is there anything else we didn't cover that you'd like to talk about?
Probably. I guess I could say that when I was in high school, I was part of a student nonviolent coordinating committee and in cahoots with some kids from Hollins. And at the time of the organization forming, I was the only black, so they made me president. I'll never forget, we went downtown across from Patrick Henry, you know, that little restaurant that they closed on the corner. And we didn't expect to get served. So we sat down and we ordered hot dogs because we didn't have any money. And they weren't deserving, so one of the girls had to go to the bank to get some money. But I think that was my senior year, or junior year.
Do you remember the name of the restaurant?
Mm-hmm. I think it was a downtowner. You know, where the motel?
Yeah.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I remember we were sitting right up front. We made the paper a few times. But I'm glad they didn't put in that we didn't have any money. I remember asking my mother about why do they call these people white? And I don't remember the answer being satisfactory, but I said, that's not white to me. Well, that was my perception. This is white, that's not white. I wasn't into much of anything but music. And I really can't, other than the fact that the musician here, Miss Woodson, Evelyn Woodson, who used to live across the street, was a traditional musician. She played music, no improvisation. Jimmy Cook took music from her. I took piano, but I'm a perfect example of no talent at the keyboard. However, I absorb music well, and they say I can sing. But I never had a conscious awareness of, like I say, I graduated high school. I had been singing all my life. Of being with white musicians or non-white musicians or entering into a group like that. Yet, as I left after high school and college, the little bit that I was there, that's the music that I enjoy has been generally and traditionally white churches. I haven't had any problem except for St. Andrew. I did have a priest meet me as we were going. I was going, coming around the building. We processed from the front of the church. And I ran into him coming around the building, and he said, "Why do you come here?" I'm in my choir robe, so even though he wasn't the head priest, and he was, I think, Filipino or something like this, right? Why do you come here? St. Gerard's right down the street. I said, I'm not Catholic, I'm Baptist. He said, why do you come here? I said, to sing in the choir. And it took me a while after that conversation to realize that was racist. At first, I was thinking, well, I sort of thought of it as racist, but it was, I didn't have a great platform, because like when I was in high school at Addison, we were the best at everything. Most of the teaching staff had masters, more than any other school in the city. The football team is undefeated 5 years. The choir was notoriously the best in the city, and one of the best in the state. I was nominated and won second. Of course, it was on the in the black groupings. Best supporting actor for my senior year in drama. I guess I assume we were doing the best we could, and that was really good. I may have stretched myself with the symphony choir, but I got some solo action out of it. Sandborg was director of that at the time, and yet he accepted me in his church choir, which is a smaller, more compact group, I guess, because he could keep more control over me. Also, I did a musical with can't think of it, HMS Pinafore,
yeah,
with the, what is the Showtimers. And yet, so racially, I really don't care, because like if I can't perform or be my best worrying about what you're going to think about me. So like I'll let you worry about me and I'll just go ahead and do what I got to do. I had at Christchurch, there was a bass who I knew was racist. In fact, I had seen him on the street, and my mother had taken her car to Valley Cadillac for whatever reason, and in a small waiting room, he wouldn't speak. And actually, the hurt was not my feelings. I felt sorry for him. He died later, and that's what I always felt racist would happen to racists anyway, but they keep reading. and another reason I find that it's not on one side or in one race. People generally, even within their own races, have low opinions of people. In fact, my grandmother, although I found it amusing and nothing anybody could do about it, was there were few things she tolerated. And if they couldn't help it, that was their business. I once heard on the telephone say, she was a great gossip. There was my grandmother, Grace Reynolds, who also sang in the choir here with her and lived on our street, and a lady named Miss Rice, I can't think of her first name, on my street. And we as kids knew that if one of them didn't know about it, it didn't happen. But I heard my grandmother say on the phone once, well, if she didn't want it talked about, she shouldn't have done it. And she meant it. And she'd have told a woman that. As long as she was right, didn't matter where she told it or what. But and actually, as I think about it now, she was very pleasant. But to say that she was kind, I wouldn't put kind. I wouldn't put a word like that. She was very pleasant and very social. My grandfather once asked me, my roommate was white, I don't understand. And yet he never mentioned racist things. He said, I don't understand where you get this love for white folks. And it again, I guess at some level it had, but it really didn't matter to me. My grandmother never mentioned it because, you know, like if I got $500 dresses, I don't need you anyway. You know, but she was very, she was beautiful. I can't describe her. She was tall. You remember the days when the women had these big fur, and then it was just a straight coat? The first time I saw her in that, I just thought it was just, because she was so tall and, you know, she didn't look like a bear walking down the street or something like that. But she was, gentle and none of that comes. I don't know. I don't know what I can say. But she was a great Roman in the city. As according to my grandfather, she had a street, 14th Street. She was the first one to request to pave it. It was one of the first streets, I understand, and off streets, side streets in Southwest that was paved. And my grandfather had, since we're talking about the race thing a little bit, I was saying that he bought his Chryslers usually 2 years old. Well, they took me, my stepfather took me to college in his 56 Chrysler. And some I've known all my life, because we used to go to Peak Zavada for vacation, for picnics and things, 4th of July, stuff like that. Again, a great family affair. We had family who come from New York to go with us to Peak Zavada. But we all knew that we had to tiptoe through Bedford. And sure enough, we were pulled over. Said the steering was loose, and my stepfather said that we were weaving. But my stepfather said he did check it when we came back, and then there was some looseness in the steering. But we never assumed that's what it was. My grandfather, he said he used to be stopped all the time, because like I said, he always had a semi-new car, and a big one at that. And he smoked cigars. So he was and he was dark as they came. So I guess he was a traditional nigger driving a big car on a side street. And, you know, he said he would frequently get stopped. In fact, he paid a fine for me when I came from California. I was very good on California roll at a corner, you know. I rarely slowed up. I'd slow up, but I rarely stopped. After about the third or fourth ticket, and I had beat them all, my grandfather said, no, boy, they're going to get your name down there, and they're going to be all over you, you know. So he paid the last and made me promise to slow up. But I don't know where I was. I just roamed there for a moment. I think the ego kicked in, and I realized that I hadn't talked about myself enough. But I think I'll do. I think that's about it. And I understand that if we get more information, we could come down. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Or